Welcome to the NSCA Coaching Podcast, Season 9, Episode 21.
Yeah, it's just a high energy, exciting area to be in. So like when I was interning at, you know, physical therapy clinics and things like that, it was just so dull and boring. And being an athlete, you're just used to that, like that a certain level of hypeness. And I think that's what the weight room gives me. And I think for me, I went into strength and conditioning, obviously because I loved it and had a passion for it. But I think also being able to be what I didn't have when I was in college, I didn't have a strength and conditioning coach. And me and my friends, I'm still best friends with two of the girls I ran track with. And they're like, Faith, like all the stuff y'all do is like so cool. Like we would have been so much better if we would have had access to that, if we would have known this, if we would have known that. And I'm like, yeah, like 100%. So I think if I would have had what I am, I would have been so much better as an athlete. And I think it would have really inspired me. So I just tried to kind of be that person for my athletes.
This is the NSCA's Coaching Podcast, where we talk to strength and conditioning coaches about what you really need to know but probably didn't learn in school. There's strength and conditioning, and then there's everything else.
This is the NSCA Coaching Podcast. I'm Eric McMahon, NSCA's Coaching and Sports Science Program Manager. On Season 9, we've talked a lot about colleges and universities. There's a lot going on in that space around the strength and conditioning profession, and this area continues to evolve and specialize. Today, we're joined by Dr. Faith Brown at George Mason University in the D.C. area. She's the Associate Director of Strength and Conditioning and works with women's basketball and volleyball. Coach, welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Eric.
Yeah, we ran into each other, got to talking. Next thing you know, you're on the podcast. That's how it works. How's everything going?
Yeah, it's going good. And I mean, I think that just talks about kind of highlights the power of like networking and going up and talking to people. Like I've been at so many of the NSCA conferences and I know who you are, but I've never actually like, you know, went up and spoke to you. And then, you know, I went and sat in that CPSS talk and yeah, I was like, I want to touch base with him. And yeah, here we are.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's something that we aim for at the NSCA is getting out and connecting with as many coaches and professionals as possible. But we want to hear your story. How'd you get into the strength and conditioning profession? I saw you were a track athlete in college.
Yeah, so I ran track in college and I was at D2 University, Shaw University, which is in HBCU in Raleigh, North Carolina. And at that time, we didn't have a strength and conditioning coach. A football had one, but our track coach would write up our lifts and we would kind of do them. Like, you know, no one was really keeping track of how often we did them. I always liked lifting though. So I would probably be in the weight room at probably like once or twice a week, but we didn't have the knowledge. Nobody really had the knowledge of, you know, what we were doing. So we would, you know, squats, deadlifts, pull-ups, bench press, and then, you know, track. We always want to do a bunch of abs. So, you know, like, all right, 500 abs in the day. And, you know, that was the extent of our lifts. And then after I graduated from Shaw, I went to VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. And I was training at a CrossFit gym at the time, and I connected with this guy who was talking to me about VCU strength and conditioning department. He was like, yeah, you should like try interning there. Like, he's like, I think you really like it. And I started looking it up and I, you know, went on the website and applied for the internship and, you know, went on the interview, got the internship. And then at the end of the first week, I just fell in love with it. I was like, this is what I want to do. Because prior to that, I thought I wanted to do physical therapy. And I did 1,000 clinical hours throughout my undergrad in different areas, geriatric, occupational therapy, physical therapy, personal training, because we just had to, you know, touch every aspect, but we never had strength and conditioning as one of those options, I think, because, you know, it was like a newer field and our coordinator at the time was older and I just don't think he had the knowledge of it. So I fell in love with it. And then at the end of that first week, I was driving down to my mom's and I actually got into a car accident and I broke my femur, broke my leg. And so I couldn't continue with the internship. And I was able to, you know, rehab, went through that whole process, went back to school. This was in the summer. So I went back to school for my second year of grad school in August and still was rehabbing, still was on like crutches, cane, so I couldn't really like intern. So then the following January, I reapplied for the internship, was able to redo the internship and then, you know, continue on from there. So once I graduated from VCU, I got my CSCS while I was in grad school. So I had my CSCS and then I was also working at like a hybrid mix of physical therapy, strength conditioning type facility. I was doing that part time And then Jeff Derrido, who was the internship coordinator who I was a GA under at VCU, he was sending me different job postings for part-time, internship, full-time. And so he sent me one for Georgetown University. And I was applying to so many different ones. I ended up applying to that one and then being able to get that opportunity. So I moved up to DC area for that Georgetown opportunity. And it was a great opportunity. I learned a ton. And as a result of that, I ended up also being contracted out to work at a high school, the Potomac School in McLean, Virginia. And that was a good opportunity. I had a whole high school to myself. So I was a head strength coach, had a lot of responsibilities there. And then at the end of that, I was like, I need something full time. Like this part time, I've got my master's, I got my CSCS, I had other certifications. So I was applying to different universities and I saw a posting for George Mason pop up. So I applied to that and I did the interview and I honestly did not think I did well in the interview at all. Just the interview ended up just being kind of weird. They had like an itinerary, and at the end of the itinerary, I was supposed to have a lunch with like my boss's boss, and then my boss. We were supposed to have like a little three-way lunch, and he just kind of sent me on my way, shook my hand, was like, "All right, great, nice meeting you, whatever." And I went on about my way, and I was like, "Okay, so I must have not done well in that because they didn't even invite me to lunch." But either way, I ended up getting the call that they wanted me for the job, so I got the job, and I have been here ever since. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. And I think everybody's path is different. My path was a little bit off because I got my master's while I was kind of figuring out where most people kind of figured out maybe an undergrad and then they go like the undergrad GA, part-time, full-time route. Mine was kind of all over the place, but I think it worked out really well for me. So yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah, you talked about physical therapy kind of led you on your path towards strength and conditioning. You went on to get a PhD. So higher education was always part of your path in this field. Why was it important for you to pursue that advanced education?
Yeah, I think like the way that I was raised, like my parents, there was never an option of like not going to college. Like I don't like some people grow up and their parents like, oh, like you can go do a trade and go into the military. Me and my brother, like it was just college was the only option. I didn't even know that there was really anything else outside of that. So I think that was their biggest thing. And so when I went on to pursue my master's, both my parents have their master's. So it wasn't like that was an expectation or anything like that. But once I realized I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I also was looking at like job postings and just talking to different people. And everybody who I was mentoring under or interning under, they had a master's degree or an advanced degree. So I was like, well, it's not going to hurt me to go to get a master's degree. So that was kind of the thought process. And I figured that would give me 2 more years to maybe kind of figure it out. And ultimately, it really did. And I tell our interns now, a large part of college is figuring out what you don't want to do. So we have a lot of interns that come through the weight room. And I mean, what, 85% of them aren't going to continue in strength and conditioning, especially, or maybe collegiate strength and conditioning. But a part of them doing that internship is figuring out this is not what I want to do. So what else is left out there that maybe I want to explore? So I think that's kind of what my college journey was. But the PhD was something I started thinking about after I finished my master's. After I finished my master's, I was like, I'm done with school. I need to take a break, like, 6 straight years. And then I started kind of looking more into it, but then I was like, I can't really like work a full-time job as a strength coach and like get a PhD. I was like, that's something that no one does. Like, how can this even happen? And then when I started at George Mason and I met Dr. Jones and started talking to her about what her PhD students were doing. And I kind of shared with her, like, I really want to get a PhD. It's just something that I think will be a life goal that I would want to achieve. And looking at the way that her role was and the potential I saw for myself at George Mason, I felt like it might make sense to do. And so then logistically, I just started talking to her about like, how can we make this work? And she was great. She connected me with everyone who I needed to be connected with. She was the chair of my dissertation committee. So she was kind of orchestrating the whole thing and pushing me way out of my comfort zone. But yeah, it was something that I wanted to do, but I just never thought I'd be in a place where I could actually do it. And then realizing I could do that at George Mason, I was like, this is an opportunity that I have to pursue. And once I started, it was very, very hard. But once I started, I was like, it's no looking back, So I was like, I just gotta keep pushing through. And I think it was worth it. I think education is something no one can take away from you. So you might be in any job or any industry down the road, but you're always gonna have that bachelor's degree, master's degree, PhD.
And it speaks to your role now. It's a balancing act. You have two teams. You also do some work with the Patriot Performance Lab on the sports science front. How does that balancing act work for you?
Yeah, it's pretty chaotic. It's like a circus act, honestly. But I think my priority is women's basketball in every aspect of what they do. And then like you mentioned, I do have women's volleyball. And women's volleyball, I mainly work with them in the weight room, and then I do conditioning with them in the off season, the first 6 weeks of that off season. And when I can, I try to get over to their matches just to see and support them. And they've been a team I've had this whole time, so I have a great relationship with them. But I have struggled with the fact that I have to miss a lot of things for them. While we this past 3 weeks, I was in Spain, or past 2 weeks, I was in Spain with basketball, and I had to miss the first 2 weeks of their preseason. And because the basketball summer schedule, usually they go 8 weeks in the summer, and then there's a week off between basketball and when volleyball starts up for preseason. So that would be my week that I would take, and I would come down to my mom's house and spend time with her like I am now. But because basketball trained all the way through until we went to Spain, and then we came back from Spain, and then volleyball's already in their preseason, this was the only week I could take off. So I ended up missing there before the school starts next week. So I ended up missing their entire preseason. So that I really struggle with that, because I don't think it's fair to them that, I'm not there for such an important part of their season. But we make it work, and the coach I work with is great with that. But then with the lab, it's kind of whatever's going on in the lab. So we have a variety of PhD students and master's students who are doing projects and things in there. And then as far as our strength coaches, we do a lot of the testing, or we kind of get the schedule for the testing for the PhD students to do in the lab. So that might be DEXA scans, HUMAC testing, so the isokinetic muscle testing machine. We have force plates now that we can use outside of the lab, the vault plates. So it's just constant communication regarding what's going on in the lab, what do we need out of the lab. I don't have a dedicated role in the lab as of right now. I do have a PhD student that's ironically coming from Spain. So I actually met her when we were just in Spain. She's going to be flying over actually on Sunday. And she's going to be mentoring under me for her study abroad semester. So with her, I'll have like dedicated, responsibilities with kind of helping teach her stuff in the lab, teach her, what I'm doing with basketball, volleyball, all that. But I don't have a dedicated role in the lab, and that's something that, like I talked to you about, we're working on actually getting defined so that we can really elevate the lab. Because right now it's Dr. Jones is the director. And then we have the PhD students, and then our strength coaches kind of help here and there with different stuff in the lab. So it's kind of like an all hands on deck. But I think to really move the lab forward and to really like continue on to uphold the mission of George Mason Athletics and what we want out of the sports performance department, we need to have defined roles of like a director, an associate director, and actually like a staff that runs the lab on a day-to-day basis, because it's a little bit too much for our whole strength staff to be jumping in and helping in the lab. It's a lot on the PhD students as well, and we don't really have any help from anyone else. So it's a circus act, but we make it work. But I enjoy the work that I do in there, and that's why I show up every day and do it.
So, I as a track athlete, lots of great strength coaches come from the sport of track. You're working with court sports now. Was that a transition for you and your mindset, maybe around athleticism? How do you approach different sports than you played?
Yeah, so I played basketball actually growing up. I guess I should have mentioned that. So I played basketball growing up. So that was my goal. Like when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a WNBA athlete. I had pictures of like Lisa Leslie on the wall, Kobe Bryant. I was a big basketball fan, but I was a very, very small kid. So I was like 95 pounds soaking wet. And my mom came to one of my basketball games, and the girls were just so much bigger than me. And one girl just kind of like threw me to the ground, and I was like slow to get up. And my mom was like, oh no. She told my dad, like, get her out of this. Like, she can't do this. Like, put her in track. And I did enjoy watching track too. So I've always had a love for the sport of basketball, and I understand it. So working with basketball was actually like, I think it was like a nice change of pace. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I get to, work with this sport. And even with the coaches I've worked with, I've learned more and more about it, and more about like what they want to see versus kind of my mindset and my eyes and what I see. So it's been good. Volleyball, that's a sport that I played a little bit in middle school, but I didn't know much about it. So definitely working with that sport and talking to those athletes, I've learned a lot. And I mean, they love the sport, so they enjoy talking to me about it, and just going to practices and games and just kind of seeing, the style of play, and just learning more about it has been great. And I think it's definitely a two-way street with talking to coaches and learning from them about the sport and like what they want to see, and definitely compromising on certain things. So I do run a conditioning test for women's volleyball because that's what the coach wants, and that's the first time in my career 2 years ago that she came to me and said, "Hey, I want to, run a conditioning test." And so I was like, okay, like I'm thinking, what should that look like, for that sport? And so I reached out, to my network of people who work with volleyball and talking about kind of what have they done. And then I just went and sat down with the staff and I was like, what do you want to get out of this test? What are we really trying to measure and assess here? And so kind of with that kind of collaboration and triangulation with everyone, then I was able to go back to the drawing board and come up with a conditioning test that to me made sense. I felt like set the athletes up for success and then also achieved what the coach wanted. So it's been a learning process, but I think the biggest thing when you're working with a new sport is just get out there, watch the sport, talk to the coaches, talk to the athletes, learn as much as you can about it.
So back on your doctoral work and how you approach analytics and sports science within your coaching, workload monitoring is a huge topic right now in the field. Where do you see this topic? Obviously, it's a huge topic when you're saying workload monitoring. How do you apply that in your day-to-day as a strength coach or just as a guide for your sport coaches in helping them figure out playing time and workload in all these different areas?
Yeah, so it can be tricky because it really comes down to how much your coaches know and understand about it, how you can communicate it, and if they really care about it, at all. So I think when I first started using it, it was pretty new. I started using it in 2018 with Catapult, and I was doing RPEs, and I was still, it was just so much. And so I was learning it, and our coach at the time, our women's basketball coach, she just wanted as much information. You have coaches that just want a ton of information. And like most people, you're thinking, okay, this number is higher, so that means this person is working harder, this person is better. And so trying to explain that that's not always the case was a little bit tricky. And I think I, like most people, when you first start using it, you like kind of information dump and you just give them everything all at once. And it's way too much information for them to digest. So now I'm way simpler with it. I'm just like, let me give you like a couple of nuggets of kind of what this means, or what this trend is saying, and kind of what are our next steps, and just try to keep it simple because the coaches that I've worked with have been a little bit older, so it's not something they use when they were playing. It's just all new to them, and they've been successful without it. So they're like, okay, they don't really want to hear too much about it. But I think some of the younger coaches that are coming up who have played and used it are a lot more open to it and a lot more open to suggestions and allowing it to help influence, the practice training and how we approach games and subbing in games and different things like that. But I think really with workload management, I think it's really gonna, I mean, I think it's already taken off. You already see dedicated jobs that are, directly geared towards sports science and workload management. And I think people are starting to see how important it is for our athletes' health, longevity, wellness, and performance in the field. So mainly, I use it with women's basketball. Women's volleyball, we were able to get an NCAA grant actually for a research study for them to use a wearable called Vert, which is like similar to Catapult, but it just really tracks jumps and impacts of jumps and like the intensity of the landings and things like that. And so that was a research project some of our PhD students worked on. And I think that was really insightful for those coaches to see how much jumps these athletes were taking during the season. And that helped me kind of reinforce like how many jumps am I actually doing with them in the weight room during preseason? Does it make sense for me to even have a low jump count with them in the weight room when I know that they're taking 300 jumps between a morning and an afternoon practice? So it kind of helps influence the way that I program a lot. And I think like when we have intense days on the court, do I want that to match up with our intense days in the weight room? We lift before we practice, so it's kind of tough for me to kind of adjust. A lot of people who practice before, they can look at the loads and say, okay, what adjustments do I want to make? So I just kind of have to make adjustments maybe for the next day or later in the week. So we use GPS, heart rate, RPE, force plates regularly, and then we use the HUMAC, the isokinetic machine. We use that about 3 or 4 times a year, and we do body composition 3 or 4 times a year. So even on a weekly or daily basis, I feel like I have a good insight into the loads that they're experiencing and then how their body is responding to it. So I feel really good about adjusting in the weight room and even sometimes just talking to the athletes. And a lot of times just talking to the athletes, what they say will match exactly up with what I'm seeing from their loads. In terms of, well, not their loads, but like their counter movement jump or RSI mod. So if athletes like, yeah, I'm not feeling that great, I'm at 50%, sometimes I'll see that when they jump. Or sometimes I'll have athletes who are on the opposite end, they'll say, oh, this is going to be a really low jump, it's not even going to make double digits, and then they jump 13, you know. So I think just kind of, again, triangulation of everything is kind of how I make decisions. And I think a lot of it is a gray area. I am confident with certain things. I'm like, yeah, I know this is gonna, you know, lead to this. But sometimes I'm really like, you know what, I'm gonna try this and, you know, use the best judgment I can to make this decision, and then I'm gonna see how it goes. And, you know, a lot of times it'll go well, and other times I'm like, okay, maybe I should have went the other route, you know. But it's so new, and it's such a gray area, and I think we can't really fully predict exactly what's going to happen with athletes and bodies. You know, it's just so much variability out there. But I think I love the fact that we have the technology and resources that we have. I feel like it allows me to make an impact in a different way and not just be viewed as like the weight room person or the, you know, meathead. It allows me to be looked at as a scientist, which I think we are as strength coaches. And I think it allows me to make an impact, like I said, outside of just the weight room. So I can quantify things that the coaches can't quantify. I can bring information to meetings that no one else can, you know, talk about. So I think it allows us to kind of raise our value and raise our worth in terms of what we do in our profession.
You know, this highlights the emerging role of strength and conditioning coaches in supporting game management. There's a lot of coaches out there that have been tasked with the weight room, the four walls of the weight room. The teams come in. Once they leave, those coaches don't have responsibilities beyond that. We're starting to see embedded strength coaches, single sport strength coaches, or coaches with less team responsibilities. So that allows them to be more embedded within their teams. What's your advice for a strength and conditioning coach that is really just getting started with this workload management process, maybe starting to have these conversations with their sport coaches? How do you begin that? Maybe you don't have the technology, maybe you don't have the processes in place.
Yeah, so I would say you've got to talk to a lot of people. So like that's what I started out doing before there was, you know, CPSS, which if you're starting out in workload management and technology and you have those kind of responsibilities, I definitely think getting the book, reading it, studying for the exam, even if you're not in a place to take it yet or you can't qualify to take the exam yet. I think studying and just reading that book will help out a lot because it's really just kind of, it really gives you the background and theory into everything that we do and all that's out there in terms of workload management. But when I started out, I would just talk to coaches because there wasn't anything published. There wasn't any research out there about a lot of this stuff. So I would just say, like, I asked Catapult, I was like, what other schools have this? And then they would tell me, and I would just reach out to those strength coaches and talk to them about kind of what they're doing. And I did the same thing. The Mystics just played at our arena at EBA for a couple of games back in July. And so I know the director of strength conditioning there. And so I talked to her and then ended up talking to her two assistants that she has. And I talked to them about what they do. So like every time I have the opportunity to talk to somebody, I mean, they're a WNBA team, so they're doing things differently. They have different technology than us, but I still want to know, like, you know, what are you guys doing? What can I learn from you? What can I take and maybe apply to my program? So I think you just got to learn as much about it as you can, but definitely starting simple, starting small. If you don't have the budget to have a whole bunch of expensive technology, starting with wellness surveys and RPEs, those are the two free things that you can do that they're going to be subjective measures. So you do have to kind of look at that a little bit, but it really does provide insight into the athletes. And I think it's a starting point to start to have those conversations. So if you're doing daily wellness surveys and then you go to the meeting on Monday and you share with the coaches, yeah, like, you know, it seems like last week was a hard week of practice. We have some wellness scores that are kind of dropping low. Then maybe they tie in, yeah, we didn't do this well. We didn't do that well this weekend with the game. You can start to kind of build up trust and start to show the coaches how important it is to look at that. And then maybe when you have a chance to maybe get some sort of technology, then you can kind of implement that. But also making sure that the technology that you get is actually answering a question that is actually had it. If you don't just want to get a piece of technology and you're like, okay, now what do I do with this? You know, is this going to help us answer something? So when we started with Catapult, our athletic director or associate AD at the time that oversaw our sports performance, she thought it was a good idea because she was like, yeah, I want to quantify how much running that they're doing. She was like, I think they're doing too much running and I want to use this to quantify. And I was like, great, yeah, we can quantify the workload that they're doing. That's great. So we can start with that. And then the coach wanted heart rate monitors because she wanted to do a lot of heart rate based training, and she wanted everyone's heart rate to be up as high as possible, when, so one of our better players would not have a high heart rate. And she was like, she's not working hard and she's not working hard. Of course, like 2 years later, this girl transfers to Power Conference. They make it to the Elite Eight and she's a starter. And I would always tell the coach, like, I think she's playing down to the team. I think she's a lot better. She's in great shape. She just has to play down to the team. And of course, I think that that the fact that she went and played at a better conference and was such a key player really kind of proved that point. So I think helping everyone understand what the data is actually showing, and also regarding heart rate, that athletic director, that assistant AD at the time, she came to practice one time and the girls were they were conditioning. Everyone's heart rate is in the red, and we had it up on the TV. And she's like, "Oh, do we need to like pull some of these people? Like they're at 100% of max heart rate." And I'm like, well, if we look at the research, there's actually a paper that shows that when athletes are playing basketball, women's basketball athletes, probably the same for men, but their heart rate is going to be greater than or equal to 85% of their max heart rate. So they need to be able to work in that zone. So it's not bad. Like in games, they're going to be at 100% of their max heart rate. So that's not bad. So just being able to explain that. So you really need to know if you get something, you really need to know what it's measuring, how it's answering a question. And then I think what you can talk to the coaches about is how do we want to implement this? How does this look on a day-to-day? How do you want me to relay information to you? How do we want to make decisions based on that? And I'm studying for the CPSS right now, which I haven't taken it just because when it came out, I was in the middle of my PhD program. And Dr. Jones, of course, she was like, yeah, you guys should take this. It's going to be really applicable for you all. But I was drowning and I was like, I can't do this right now. So either way, since I finished my PhD, I've been studying for it. So I'll be taking that here in a couple months. But one of the things they talked about there was in the book was about how to get like your sports performance team and your interdisciplinary team together. And how do you guys want to communicate? How do you guys want to share information, then make decisions based on the information? So I think those are the things that really comes down, really, you really want to talk to about your coaches. And I think a lot of times it comes down to the strength coach kind of making like a one-off decision, maybe collaborating with the AT, but really pulling everybody together in and then, making those decisions together. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of learning, but yeah, I think if you just kind of start there, start with the basics and understand what you don't know, but try to seek to understand what you don't know so that you can make an impact with your athletes and your coaches is the way to go about it. But definitely networking. It always goes back to networking and talking to people.
Yeah, I mean, huge theme here. We met that way. You've connected with your coaches and your processes that way, just through your PhD, through all the different coaching experiences you've had. And you mentioned earlier working at the high school level. I want to ask you, how does being a high school coach inform your practices today? And what are some of the things that you see now that you'd want to tell high school coaches and how to better prepare athletes for the college level?
Yeah, that experience, it was really eye-opening. I thought it was just really cool that I was able to work with eighth graders, ninth graders, and just allow and like that was I was their first exposure to like, weights and strength and conditioning. I think it's good to start them at a young age because you can really instill good foundations in them and you can really just focus on like the building blocks. When I have athletes come in that have lifted in high school, I know immediately. And generally, to me, they're more athletic. They just move better. They're easily coachable. So I think really just I can't say that I've seen high school coaches making things like too complex for those athletes, but I think you can just really like hammer home the basics. And I don't think anyone's going to get bored with the basics. Obviously, with social media, athletes see so much complicated training that NFL players are doing or, high level athletes that they think that they're at that level. But I think if you can hammer home the basics, maybe add a little bit of fun stuff here and there just to kind of break up the monotony of it. But I think hammering home the basics is really going to set them up for success at the next level. When I have athletes that come in and they're saying, oh, yeah, we're doing a little bit of strength training, what should we be focusing on? I'm always like body weight stuff. Like, I think you should know how to move your body in space. Even just focus on simple things like planks, push-ups, pull-ups. I have one athlete that is from an international athlete from overseas, and she's never lifted before, but her body weight movements are just phenomenal that I didn't even know. So we started out first day, it was like some push-up, down dog type stuff. And she moved so great that then we went over to like a dumbbell bench press and she wasn't sure how to do it. I was like, that's right, you haven't lifted weights before, because it just based on how our warm-up went, I was like, yeah, she's good to go. So I think just really focusing on the basics with body weight movement, just good movement patterns. And I think even just going back to like from more of like a speed and agility or change of direction standpoint, running mechanics, going back to running mechanics, I think athletes who that I've had in my experience who've run track in high school, They are just on a different level. They just move better, I feel like, for their sport, because they have that base of, like, they know how to run without a basketball in their hand, or they just have that foundation. So I think that's always good if you can work on some running mechanics with those athletes as well.
Makes me think that there's more of an emerging need for individualized training within teams. I go back on a time when it was, hey, the football team's got this program, the basketball team's got this program. How individualized do you get with your athletes?
So with my athletes at the college level, we have basketball and volleyball have two separate programs. And with basketball, I say I get a little bit more into the weeds. So we've went about it a couple of different ways the past couple of years. They kind of all have a template when we're, like, in the off season. It's like a general template, and I make some changes and modifications based on people. Like, certain people, back squat doesn't work for them. Certain people, front squat, we need a modifier. You need to use a slant board. So we'll have those little modifications, or you can't do barbell bench, things like that. But what we've done the past couple of years is we tried to have where everybody had an additional two workouts that they had to get in with me a week. So we would have our four lifts, and they would have, like, two extra workouts that they would have to fit in with me. And we tried to kind of go from the standpoint of, when you're in practice, you have your dedicated practice days, and then you may have two mandatory workouts with the coach, or you may have, form shooting with a coach. And that's the way the weight room should be as well. Like, there's other things that you may need to work on outside of what we're working on as a team. So we want to get those sessions in. So we did that for about 2 years. And then this year, we had an optional day on Wednesday, and athletes who had massive low-hanging fruit, where lateral movement, conditioning, injury, kind of return to play type stuff, they would have dedicated separate training workouts for those days. And then other girls who wanted to get a workout in, if they were kind of pretty all even keel, nothing was, like, major standing out, then it was just an optional lift. And I feel like we kind of had fun with it. It would just be, hey, what do you want to work on today? And of course, since we were going to Spain, I had a lot of, oh, I just want to do abs today. Okay, fine, we just do abs today. And I think for our summer training, and for the fact that we have such a new team coming in, I felt like, it worked out. But the girls who had low-hanging fruit, we would get those extra workouts in with them at that time. And, just talking to the coaches about maybe some things that they can do on the court to try to reinforce it. Because a lot of the things that they see, that they're like, oh, this athlete needs to work on this with you, when we work on it in the weight room, because it's a controlled environment, it's fine. There's no issues. So we have one athlete who struggles with body control, and they're like, yeah, well, she needs to work on that with you. We do a lot of contact stuff. We do jumps while I'm pushing her. We do deceleration things. But when she's on the court and she's going at full speed is when it's highlighted. And I can't really replicate that in the weight room. That has to be an on-court thing that the coaches work on with her. So I think having that conversation as well, lateral movement we can work on. But again, when you look at certain things in the context of the game, is her lateral movement slow, or is it that she's struggling to cognitively process what's happening in front of her, and then what her body needs to do, and then her body actually doing that? Again, that's game situations, on-court things that she has to work at getting better at. It's not just a muscular, a neuromuscular thing that we need to work on. So that's kind of how we've approached the individuality. Once we go into the season, then I kind of have, like, high minute and low minute kind of structured workouts, whereas the low minute girls would do a little bit more. But that gets a little bit dicey, because then we have people who are kind of on the border, where out of two games in the week, one game they're low minute, 1 minute they're high minute. So it can be a little tricky. So once I get a group that's, like, dedicated low minute, then it's okay, we're doing extra running. You guys might do a little bit more volume in the weight room. We're gonna hit some extra lifts when we travel, things like that. But
I like that.
yeah, that's kind of how we went about it. So yeah.
Yeah, I like that, your process comes through there of manipulating or adjusting the team program to get to the individual needs of various players on the team, small groups within the team, high minute, low minute, different things. I think it's a good systemic process that you're okay. I have the team as a whole, but I can break this down into some different groups within the team. Even in a sport like basketball, where there's only five people on the court playing, and it's something that, there's a lot of crossover and responsibilities there, from position to position. Obviously, some differences as well, but individual needs as well. And I like that you highlighted the communication between the strength coach and the sport staff because that's where the performance gets put into play. And they could be very controlled. We could do some really rigid posture alignment type exercises in the weight room that maybe just aren't connecting with the dynamic chaos of what's happening on the court. So I think it's a really important discussion to have, especially as athletes are demanding more from us today. Athletes are coming in with higher expectations for our field. We could say that's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing for us because it gives us more that we can do to connect with these athletes, to provide value for our teams, provide value for our programs. I love your enthusiasm. I love your cool hybrid role that you've had, and obviously your passion to go pursue a PhD in the field. What is it that you love most about the strength and conditioning profession?
I think it's just a fun environment to be in. So I think back to when I spent my first week at VCU as an intern. It was just such a high energy, exciting, just it's just yeah, it's just a high energy, exciting area to be in. So like when I was interning at physical therapy clinics and things like that, it was just so dull and boring. And being an athlete, you're just used to that, like that a certain level of hypeness. And I think that's what the weight room gives me. And I think for me, I went into strength and conditioning, obviously because I loved it and had a passion for it. But I think also being able to be what I didn't have when I was in college, I didn't have a strength conditioning coach. And me and my friends, I'm still best friends with two of the girls I ran track with. And they're like, Faith, like all the stuff y'all do is like so cool. Like we would have been so much better if we would have had access to that, if we would have known this, if we would have known that. And I'm like, yeah, like 100%. So I think if I would have had what I am, I would have been so much better as an athlete. And I think it would have really inspired me. So I just try to kind of be that person for my athletes. I think being a woman in this field, you see it a lot more now, but I think, back in the day, like you didn't see women in these types of fields, and I think also being like a black female in this field, I think is something that allows me to connect with my athletes who, look like me. I feel like it's just they're able to see like, oh, like I can be in this field. This is something I can do, or like this is normal, when we go and travel and you get the old, football strength coaches, when they're just like, treating the women's basketball team like a football team, and I'm not that. So I think that's kind of really what it is for me, just being able to make an impact and be what I didn't have. And so I think this the field itself is just it's just a really fun and exciting field. I think we provide this unique service that you can't really quantify. A lot of athletes come in, they don't like the weight room, but one of the best things I had an athlete tell me was, I hated the weight room before you got here, and now I love the weight room. And that was like the biggest compliment I could have ever, gotten, because especially working with two female sports, like they don't really like the weight room a lot of the times. They, all these mixed images they get about body image and masculinity and muscles and things like that. So for them to come in and have me be like, positive and like, oh yeah, let's, you're doing the same weight as the men's team is doing. And then the men's team was like, wait a minute, the women's team are doing 70 pounds for farmers carries. Oh, I got to go get 80s. And having that competition, I think it's just fun. It's just such a fun field to be in. And I think we just, yeah, we provide a really unique service to the athletes. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. It's positive. It's encouraging. It fuels us as professionals and obviously fuels our athlete to be better at their sport, to be better as people. And we have a huge impact as a profession. So, for everyone tuning in, I know some people are going to want to reach out and talk to you. What's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, they can send me an email, fbrown20@gmu.edu, or my Instagram. I talk to a lot of coaches through there. It's Faith S.A. Brown on Instagram. So those are the two best ways to get in contact with me.
Awesome. We'll add those to the show notes. A lot of great takeaways today. Thank you so much for being with us. Big theme, growing with the field, growing in your education, in your approach, individualizing programs for athletes, providing a meaningful and impactful service at your institution, and working with your institution to figure out what the future holds, especially in this time of college athletics that is changing very quickly, and we got to keep our head on a swivel. So, thanks so much for being with us, Faith. Really appreciate the time today.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Eric. It was great talking to you today.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the NSCA Coaching Podcast. This is a passion project of the NSCA. We want to hear from you. So if you're someone interested in being a guest on the podcast, please reach out to the NSCA. We'd love to have you on in the future, hear your story and all the stories from professionals around the field. Thanks so much, and also special thanks to Sorenx Exercise Equipment. We appreciate their support.
Hey guys, it's Dr. Brian Mann coming at you from Texas A&M University. Hey, this is a call to arms. If you feel like there's something that needs to be done, something that needs to be changed, this is your call to go ahead and sign up for the volunteer opportunities within the SIGs, the different committees, or just to get involved in your local chapter. Please go to the website for more details.
This was the NSCA's Coaching Podcast. The National Strength and Conditioning Association was founded in 1978 by strength and conditioning coaches to share information, resources, and help advance the profession. Serving coaches for over 40 years, the NSCA is the trusted source for strength and conditioning professionals. Be sure to join us next time.